Call this committee meeting to order. This is the Monday, April 8th, 2013 meeting of the Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division. Members, we're on TV, just like everyone to know. For those of you in the audience, if you need to send a secret signal of hello to your mom, you can do that. She'll see you on TV. Folks are probably, we're expecting to see the omnibus finance bill today. We're not going to roll that out today. Hopefully we'll be able to post something tomorrow and hear it and do markup and the vote on Wednesday. Next week, we're going to have bonding bills. We have about 30 of them to get through, so folks who are listening or here who have an interest in one or more of the bonding bills, be ready to do your show and tell on that. We're going to have to run through them fairly quickly, so we're going to allow about 5 or 10 minutes at our hearing next week per bonding bill when we get to those. With that, we have Senator Dahl. I think there he is. Senate File 368. Members, if you recall, this is the driver's instruction permit requirements modification and establishing the novice driver education task force. We heard the policy on this. We had to come back for the finance piece. And so with that, we can probably go fairly quickly, Senator Dahl.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Senate File 368 does exactly what you said, does create a program that would allow...
Senator Dahl, quorum is present.
Okay. That would allow a concurrent driver's ed program after 15 hours of classroom, which means during that 30 hours, the second 15 hours could be behind-the-wheel instruction. So real application going on while the classroom is being taught. It does create a task force, if you recall, that would take a look at the recommendations of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration's National Standards for Driver Education, and to see if Minnesota maybe would want to comply or to get in line with what other states are doing, or at least the recommendations of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. The fiscal note then is for basically change in rulemaking. I think it was a total of $33,000. The one-time cost of changing the permit cards over, some changes would be need there, but I think it would be about a half-time person that would maybe needed to administer the concurrent driver ed program. You have any questions for me? I do have Joe Christensen, who's from the Minnesota Department of Traffic Safety Education Association, if you have any specific questions.
Great. Thank you. Did you want to provide
a few words,
any testimony?
Joe?
Okay. Great. Questions, members? Is this table always like a better attendance than this, this side of the table?
Mr. Chair, it's because the Republicans are really heavy on
that's
this side.
That's it. always looks like crickets over here. We got Senator Kent
pretty
kind of
even.
Holding up the
every
end of the table here. All right.
I like this.
Seems like it's heavier on
so,
this side.
All right.
I need to lose some weight.
Great. Thank you. No questions. Senator Dahl, what I think we're going to do is lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, which hopefully we'll see tomorrow. So, I've taken a pretty good look at this, and I understand it pretty well, and I think we, not to give anything away, I think we can figure out how to do this. So, with that, we'll lay Senate File 368 on the table. You might see it in a larger bill tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Skoy is not here. Okay, so we're going to move on then, members, to the next one down. Senator Champion.
Oh.
Here? No? One of our own members. All right. Senator Kent is here.
Okay.
All right.
Is Mr. Shetman here? Senator Peterson?
Now we can clear out the other
Senator
side of the
Peterson
table completely.
All right, so moving on to Senator Kent's Senate File 922, which I think is the regional capital bonds. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Looks like Senator Kent's people are not here. We're batting 1,000 here. Senator Peterson, do you want to go ahead? All right.
Are we on that?
state holiday.
Peterson?
Chairman Peterson. We have an additional handout we need to get out to folks.
All right. Page will come up. You can just, Page will come up.
Mr. Chair and members, we appreciate the opportunity to be before you this afternoon with our Senate file 1321. I do have an A1 amendment I need to offer.
Is that in our packets? All right, that's coming around.
Members, the amendment is very simple. At the time we were working on this bill, we didn't have the exact calculation for the reimbursement, so it's a simple change. It changes the appropriation from $75,000 up a little bit to $90,000.
All right. Thank you. Senator Peterson offers the A1 amendment. Very simple. It changes the 75 and the 75,000 on lines 1.6, on line 1.6 to 90,000 in both places. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair and members, what this bill does, it's a simple appropriation from MnDOT for the next couple of years from the general fund. Essentially, what's happening here, a few years back, just fairly recently, just 3 or 4 years ago, there was a bill that was passed that required Metro Transit organizations to give free ride or no charge ride to veterans within their system. And at that time, nobody really knew exactly what it was going to cost or what the total bill was going to be. And as you can see for St. Cloud, if you see this particular handout that we had in your file, you'll see if you just look at the right-hand column, you'll see that the costs to our system in St. Cloud are very, very significant. It's approaching $75,000, which is why we have this bill before you today. Simply asking for the state to get rid of this unfunded mandate on our transit systems that we have in greater Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, I have a guest with me today that's is going to testify in favor of this bill.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Kellen, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tony Kellen. I'm the Director of Operations and Technology at Metrobus in St. Cloud. I've been there 27 years. I'm also speaking on behalf of the other fixed route transit systems in Minnesota as president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. As Senator Peterson mentioned, St. Cloud, as you can see by your handouts, by far has the largest portion of this unfunded mandate. In St. Cloud, we do have a large VA hospital, and we have plateaued at around 8,000 trips per month on our fixed route system. Of that, about 400 of those trips per month are on the North Star Link commuter bus service, which is a much higher fare than our fixed route. But that's by far a small piece of it. But this year that we just finished, calendar year 2012, $65,000 in fare revenue that we had to absorb loss of fare revenue. And so this has been going on since July of 2009. So we think it would be fair and equitable to help out with this.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kellen. Questions, members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering if our testifier could tell me, Mr. Kellen, is it? Okay, Director of Operations, and I saw the title here, President of the Public Transit Association, so I wasn't quite sure. Mr. Kellen, just wondering if you can tell me the folks that come in to the VA, do you keep track of them as far as where they come from? I mean, are they all St. Cloud residents? Obviously, if they're using the North Star Link, where are they coming from to use the VA? Do you keep track of that at all?
Mr. Kellen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer, by far 400 of the 8,000 a month are using the North Star Link to access the VA down here in the Twin Cities. The balance of these people are coming out of our fixed route system in the St. Cloud area. They're people that live in the St. Cloud area. They're accessing services at the St. Cloud VA. In the past, prior to having the free ride on all fixed route services, we did have a fairly significant annual contract paid monthly by the St. Cloud VA that purchase-ordered passes, tokens, free rides for them. So by far, some of this burden has been, you know, shifted not necessarily from the vets themselves, but from the agency itself.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. Kellen, you're saying that prior to this, the St. Cloud VA itself did have programs for veterans to accommodate their needs for transportation, but they're no longer doing that, and instead this is being used?
Mr. Kellen.
Yes, Chair. Senator Kiffmeyer, I don't want to water this down. I understand the context of your question. I think if we look at our ridership, what this mandate has done is it's helped veterans to access transportation easier. When we first started tracking this, there was, you know, 3,000 to 4,000 trips a month. That's continued to go up. So the surveys that we have done and the data that we have would say that these people are getting more transportation and accessing more services in the community, not just necessarily the VA hospital. But the percentage of the fares that were paid directly by the VA in respect to that question, maybe 30% of in an annual contract revenue, we did track that. So by means, not the majority of this lost revenue.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, if there were no further questions, we would encourage your support for this bill.
Right.
As you've heard, we believe it's an unfunded mandate, and this is we believe good policy that the legislature ought not to pass legislation that doesn't provide the funding as well. And this is a simple fix that I would hope that you would consider financing for the greater Minnesota communities moving forward.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Peterson. I agree it's a good idea. It's worth paying for. $75,000 may not sounds like a lot of money to me, but you know, in the context of the numbers we deal with, sometimes we lose sight of the fact that $75,000 is a lot of money, and it's a lot of money to smaller transit systems.
Yes.
When I think about how many dollars we appropriate to Greater Minnesota Transit from the general fund compared to what we take to pay for transit services in the metro area, I think, really, it's that little bit amount of money? But, it turns out that a little bit of money provides a tremendous amount of service in greater Minnesota. So $75,000 or $90,000 is a big impact and a big impact for these providers to absorb. So I think it's a good idea. Again, not foreshadowing too much, but there may be a position for this in the bill we might see tomorrow. So with that, we'll lay Senate File 1321 on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson. All right, Senator Kent, we'll jump to you. I see Mr. Shetland is here to help us out as well. Welcome to the committee, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I am here today to introduce Senate File 922, which is a bill from the Metropolitan Council that would provide regional bonds for regional transit capital needs. The regional transit bonds support the capital projects of all regional transit providers and services throughout the 7-county metro area, including Metro Transit, Suburban Transit Providers, Metro Mobility, and Transit Link Dial-A-Ride. Fleet replacement generates the greatest demand for these funds. Bonds are also used for capital preservation, park and ride lot expansions and improvements, transit station improvements, and other capital equipment to help the regional transit programs operate efficiently. And so with that brief overview, I will let Judge Shetnan take you through some of the details and answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Shetnan.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and appreciate Senator Kent for carrying this bill. As many of you know, this is an annual bill that we bring before the legislature. The past 2 years it was carried in the transportation finance bill, and what these bonds allow us to do is basically provide the small capital payment for bus fleet, shelters, and the like. They are not general obligation bonding bills, so I just want to be clear about that. These do not have the lifespan of what the state would generally bond for. Again, the majority of these bonds are used to replace fleet, and in fact, we use these normally as local match to federal dollars that we receive in order to replace our fleet. We also received, when we receive the authorization from the state, we oftentimes have to hold that authority because we have to show a, say, one of our large Gillig or a New Flyer, for the folks from Crookston and St. Cloud, we have to show that we have the bond authorization in hand before they will enter into an agreement with us in order to do this build. And oftentimes that takes 18 to 24 months before we have to call on those and levy the debt for this for those purchases. But this is a cyclical request that we come back every year. And this year we're asking for $35.8 million, which is a 1% uptick over what we had previously asked in previous years. Last year we actually added a little bit more, which was given to the opt-out providers as part of an offset to a reduction they took in the budget agreement in 2011. So with that, Mr. Chair, I can speak to any questions you would have, but just to be clear, again, this is for all the dial-a-ride service in the metro area. It is for metro mobility. It is to every one of our suburban transit authorities, also known as our opt-out providers, so everyone who represents an opt-out, and also metro transit. So this benefits all transit systems in the metro area, and again, this is something that we come forward to the legislature every year, and I appreciate your support.
Every year or every other year?
Mr. Chair, we come with the request every year. There have been situations where a tax bill has not been agreed to in previous years, so we've come back and sought twice the authority.
I see.
In the past, mm-hmm. And again, we need this authority in order to enter into agreements, and so it just that basically brought us up to a cliff where we were worried about whether or not we'd have the authority in hand in order to enter these contracts. So to avoid those issues, the past 2 years, Senator Gimsey, Representative Beard in the House, and us from the administration agreed to carry this in the transportation finance bill, and I think that's just a wonderful idea.
I agree. All right. Questions, members? Nope. All right. Thank you very much. Again, a little foreshadow. I'm guessing there might be a little piece in a future omnibus bill that'll contain this bonding authorization for the Met Council. With that, Senate File 922 is laid on the table. Thank you, Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee.
Right. Chair members,
thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Senator Skoy is here. Great, thank you. Senator Skoy, Senate File 1213.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here with Senate File number 1213. This is a effort to make which is currently a annual permit for overweight vehicles that agriculture and forestry products can utilize a statewide permit option for vehicles that add 6th and 7th axles. The history of this has been around for a number of years. I think we first passed it for agriculture. Senator Saxog at some point amended on to our agriculture provision the effort for forest products. And as I was heading into my work this start of this legislative session, I had discussion with folks up in Becker County who are trying to bring a building material distribution center into Becker County, and the the competing area for this plant is North Dakota, which has more weight per truck than Minnesota does based on the history of when the federal government implemented those requirements. And so I started out trying to look at different ways to make some exemption for the container vehicles that were coming in, and as it turned out, none of that was going to work. So we started trying to do another specific exemption, and through the process came around to realize probably would be better and easier if we just made this a general permit, annual permit for overweight vehicles across the state, and these would be for state roads only, not for interstates. We're here today with this initiative. I'd like to remind the committee that the size of the vehicle is not changing any, and actually the weight per axle is reduced as you add axles, and so the weight on the impact on the road should actually be reduced some. The braking capacity is actually increased because you add brakes on each one of these axles and the weight per axle is reduced. And so I think there's a list of testifiers that would like to provide additional information. And Mr. Chair, if we want to move to that, be happy to.
Great. Thanks. Any questions at this point for Senator Skoy? Why don't we move to testifiers? I've lost my list here. We'll just move on down the list that we have on the agenda. Mr. Smith?
Yes, sir.
Great, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself and then proceed.
Yep, Mr. Chair, thank you. Jonathan Smith. I'm the City Administrator, Clerk Treasurer for the City of Frazee, Minnesota. I'm actually in Senator Skoy's district, and I would be one of those folks that talked to Mr. Skoy earlier this year. As he alluded to, and my interest in this is we've been working with a distribution and manufacturing company, and actually I'm going to reference a letter that you should have in your packets from Menards. In your packets, and I've been working with them for about 2 years now on a facility located just currently outside of the Frazee city limits. If this happens, it will be in the city limits. They approached us, like I said, 2 years ago to come to Frazee and bring up to 250 jobs, potentially 350 jobs for our small community of 1,300. They're talking up to a $60 million facility, again, in a community that has just under half a million in tax base right now. So you could just imagine the impact that this facility would have to our community. Becker County and Otter Tail County are probably some of the highest unemployment rates, I believe, in the state. So these 250 jobs would be extraordinary for our region as a whole, not just our community. But as we've been working with them, we were as far as land agreement, purchase agreement, everything on the table, and then the distribution end of their company came in and said, wait a second, it cost us twice as much, if not three times as much, to haul in Minnesota than it does in North Dakota. That difference is so substantial that at this point it makes more sense for them to build in North Dakota, pay higher wages, pay more to get raw materials, than it does to be in Minnesota because of these transportation costs. So that's one of the biggest issues that we've seen. I was by no means an expert in transportation, and I still don't claim to be. But as we move forward and I learn a lot more about this, it really is a beneficial thing for the state. I just wonder how many other communities have missed out on opportunities like this. To bring, manufacturing and distribution to their communities, bring these jobs to their communities, and they've really missed the boat because of transportation costs. I believe there's also a map in your packet that shows kind of how Minnesota compares to some of our surrounding states as far as weight limits. It's gotten to the point we have a great trucking company in Frazee right now, Daggett Truck Line. It's gotten to the point where they talk to truckers around the state, and they're literally driving around Minnesota. They're driving down through Iowa and up through South Dakota and into North Dakota to avoid coming through Minnesota because it's more cost-effective for them to haul those heavier weights and bypass Minnesota than it is to come through our state. Just the revenues that we're missing out there with fuel and all the other convenience-type things and food and the like. So, as we look for this, Frazee has a kind of a vested interest in this because it is important for not only our community, our region, but the state as a whole. As we've been kind of moving forward, we sought some, some support from other outside agencies, which I don't believe any of the letters made the packets, but the League of Minnesota Cities had adopted a policy similar to the bill language that Senator Skoy has introduced, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. I believe the county engineers are behind it as well, or at least the Association of Minnesota Counties are. You know, obviously the aggregate industry, the trucking industry, you know, the list goes on the support to this measure. So it is really something that needs to be looked at and addressed. MnDOT, I believe, did a study back in 2006 that really kind of supports this. And as we move towards our 10-ton road systems and the like, it's definitely an important piece for Minnesota to move ahead. So,
thank you, Mr. Smith. Questions, members? All right, thank you. Great. I'll start calling folks up by two so we can move through the testifiers list efficiently. I have Mr. Everest and Mr. Lawrence next on the list. All right, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Okay, I'm Joe Lawrence with Miles Lawrence Incorporated, our headquarters between Mankato and St. Peter, Minnesota. I'm a major stockholder and president of a construction and heavy haul company. We haul heavy equipment and do some mining and heavy construction around the United States, working primarily from the Mississippi River to the Rockies and from the Canadian border to the Gulf. We have about 70 employees. We use Local 49 for most of our heavy equipment operators, stuff like that. We've developed into a situation where we need to be more than a company that needs to operate more than within 30 miles of Mankato. There isn't a steady workload there anymore. We need to be on a level playing field with our streets or our states around us. Our labor force recognizes that. We have the support of our operators. They'd like to stay with the company and be able to go where the work is. It really creates just a level playing field for us to be able to work with in the areas around us. We've found some interesting things in the time that we've done this. We've been in business doing this for about 40 years. As we've traveled, we found many of the states are at various stages of handling larger truckloads. Some of the common things that we have found, especially in our mining work where we have to maintain and build our own highways, and in some of the areas we've had to make agreements with local governments to take care of our own highways. But when we've used an equalized suspension, stayed within the limits of the federal bridge law, our cost of maintaining our haul roads is greatly reduced. If you can imagine, it's very much the same thing as you using snowshoes for a winter activity. You simply spread the weight out over a much larger footprint. If you stay within those federal bridge limitations and guidelines, you'll actually create less damage to the roads because you have less weight per axle. One of the things that we, as a side benefit, we discovered, as we put more full equal axles in each group, we also increased our braking capacity. Our insurance costs have actually gone down because we have fewer accidents. With an increased braking capacity, we can stop. Our rigs, when they are heavy, stop better than they would at 80,000 pounds with only 5 axles. And it's been a reasonable savings to us. Let's see. I appreciate the opportunity to explain this to you. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to ask them. there's been the question of, you know, does it create more jobs? Does it create less? We really will end up creating more and better jobs as we improve the opportunity for industry within our state. We have to be able to be competitive with South Dakota, with Iowa. Iowa, just in the last few years, increased its gross weights to 97,000 pounds on their state roads. We need to be able, the farmers need to be able to take beans into Iowa or feed into here or whatever. We need to be able to do the same things. It's not, it doesn't matter whether you're Menards or a farmer. You have the same issues. We need an equal playing field. I thank Senator Skoll for being willing to introduce this, and I thank you all for the opportunity to be able to express those opinions and offer to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lawrence, thanks for coming down and sharing your expertise with us, and thank you for choosing to do business in Minnesota. I am sure your employees and your community appreciate that, as we all do. My sense is, I don't know exactly, but my sense is when you're operating a heavy vehicle, there's some daily inspections that you would do. Can you describe, is that accurate first? And then if that is, can you describe what those might be?
Normally, you would do all the normal daily inspections that our federal and state laws require of any commercial vehicle. It's simply that you have another axle or two to make sure the brakes are working properly on. You do the walk-arounds, the visual inspections, make sure they're DOT certified and approved. It's all about just becoming more modern and more efficient with that. I've worked significantly with Representative Walls. A very similar bill is waiting for an opportunity to get something done at the federal level. That seems to be moving once Congress gets so it can move a little bit. It's a trend that's coming, and he sent a letter and included it in your packet so you can be part of that. Over the last few years, we've gone through a lot of the concerns various people have had about what it does to roads, this and that sort of thing. The key elements seem to be the additional braking capacity, staying with a single unit, and having equalized axles within a group. And then the problem issues tend to go away.
Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. Lorenz, can you describe a little bit what training you might have for the drivers of the vehicles in terms of
Mr.
those
Lawrence.
Inspections?
Essentially, the training would be just an extended thing of what we go through now with all of our drivers, where we do behind-the-wheel testing, we do walk-around training, we do film training, we do about anything you can imagine to put them out there, because you can't afford to have an unsafe driver out there. And if anything, it allows us to make our driver more important, comparable to our fuel costs. So it allows us to be in a position to upgrade safety equipment and also actually pay our professional drivers better. We can do more. We can give more if we can do more.
Sure. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Lawrence. Anything further, members? Mr. Everest.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. My name is Rob Everest. I'm president of the LG Everest Company. We operate 18 locations, including Ortonville, Minnesota. We operate a quarry in Ortonville. We're in six states, and we're primarily in the aggregate mining and production business. I also operate a short line railroad in the Dakotas and Iowa. I'm here today to speak on behalf of the bill and how important it is for my business and how beneficial it would be for the state of Minnesota. And I'm primarily interested in growing business and becoming more competitive, employing more people, and ensuring the long-term viability for my company. And I'm a proponent of the rail industry, obviously, since I run a short line railroad myself, but I'm also a proponent of the trucking industry. But mainly, I'm interested in combining transportation in the best possible manner to keep Minnesota competitive and to keep employment local. Under the current weight restrictions on roads in Minnesota, the state is at a disadvantage to neighboring states. And I'll just call your attention to this map that's in your packet that shows the weights of neighboring states, the weight restrictions on neighboring states versus Minnesota. In my particular case, I'm at a disadvantage to a competitor in South Dakota on certain bids solely on the transportation component of crossing through a couple miles of Minnesota road to get into South Dakota. I'm put at a disadvantage. What I'm looking for and what I think is best for the state is to level the playing field. Similar trucking weights in all neighboring states would allow me and other businesses in Minnesota to be more competitive. My facility in Ortonville is also rail-served, and we ship as much as we can on rail. For longer distances and whenever rail sightings and access are available, we'll continue to use steel wheels. But the added benefit of increasing truck weights is it also improves the competitiveness of rail transportation. Because any business that brings in product via rail will also need to transport it to the final destination on truck. The more weight a truck can haul, the fewer trucks will be on the road. It's not only more efficient, but it's safer. So the studies have been done. You've got the studies that have been done over the last few years, and the experts have all weighed in. That's supposed to be funny. So. Increasing truck weights is good business.
Yeah, we're not funny in the Senate.
It's safer. It provides an opportunity to grow Minnesota business and provides a level playing field with our neighboring states.
Great.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Everest. Questions, member? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Both of these testifiers have presented, good information, but one of the things that concerns me about the fact that that the truckers would be driving around Minnesota, avoiding Minnesota. With interstate roads these days, you have choices in some of these things, and I'm sure it's not particularly convenient. But that bothers me because it means restaurants, gas stations, repair and maintenance of vehicles. I mean, actually avoiding Minnesota because of this is also a demonstration that this is more of a burden. And seriously, and that affects our local drivers because a lot of times you have, if they're driving around, then your jobs tend to be based in those other states as well. So that's a great concern. So I appreciate your giving insight and information to this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Berezovsky could make sure that I'm correct in my thought, but this bill is only applying to state roads, not the interstate system?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, I believe that the only reference to the interstate system has to do with 1.16, 1.17, that only sealed intermodal containers that are part of an international movement could travel on the interstate, and that's with the six-axle vehicles.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Ms. Berezovsky, is that consistent with a federal exemption that they have for bringing containers into the state?
Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, that's the understanding that I've received from MnDOT, but that is consistent with Map 21.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I may be the only one, but, what was the answer to the question? Does this apply to interstate highways or doesn't it?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Yes or no?
I think the answer is.
Senator Senjum, these vehicles cannot operate on an interstate highway unless they are carrying only sealed intermodal containers that are in international commerce. That's the only exception that allows travel on the interstate for these vehicles.
So
Mr. Chair and Mr. Senator, if it is sealed, they can go down an interstate highway.
if Senator Sundrum, if they're coming from another country, is that correct, Ms. Berezovsky?
Yes, Mr. Chair, or going to another country.
Or going to another country. Sealed and crossing an international boundary, an international border.
Mr. Chair. Okay.
And Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sundrum, I think that came about so that the port of Duluth could be competitive with the bringing of those international containers into Minnesota.
And Ms. Berezovsky or MnDOT, they can help us understand the reason for this. Is that a federal interstate rule? There's a weight limit presently on of however many pounds on the federal interstate system now. All right. I see someone from MnDOT coming to the table. Thank you. Gene Halverson, thank you. Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, members, Gene Halverson from MnDOT. The intermodal containers has been in there for quite a while. What we didn't put in there was the fact that they had to be part of an international movement, and so we got a letter from FHWA, Federal Highway Administration. That ruling goes back to 1984 in a letter called the Barnhart Letter. Mr. Barnhart was the administrator of Federal Highway at the time. And it was a ruling on the port of Charleston, South Carolina, bringing in international containers on ships. These intermodal containers also come into Minnesota by rail. And so if, for instance, I'll give you an example, we have soybeans that are headed to Japan, and they place them in intermodal containers, put them on the railroads, they're taken to the ports on the ocean ports, and then loaded on ships and taken over to Japan. They can travel on the interstate as long as they're part of that international movement. These other weights that we're talking about, 90, 97,000, they can operate on any of the roads except for the interstates. The main weight on the interstate is 80,000 pounds, except for the international containers.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum.
I always think by example. So if something's coming from Canada down Interstate 29, I think that's it. What would be the maximum weight on that truck?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, that would be running in North Dakota. Their top weight is 105,500
okay.
pounds.
Okay. Well, what if 29 was in Minnesota?
In this particular bill, in this statute that we have here, it would be 90,000 pounds.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Chair, just on those containers, typically what do they weigh? I mean, what is the weight in them that's running on our interstates if they are going overseas?
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, I have to look here 1 second. Chairman, Senator Westrom, it would be 90,000 pounds they would be allowed if they were part of an international movement. With the permit.
They still can't exceed our weight, maximum weight either way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, no, it would be with if they bought this permit that's in this bill, it would be 90,000 pounds.
I see. Very good. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, what is current law on the export containers? Still 80,000 pounds under today's law?
Mr. Howers.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, currently they can haul, well, currently we've had it in our law for quite a while that they could haul 90,000, but we got in trouble for that because we didn't have international movement in there. Fact of the matter is we discovered that when we got the letter from FHWA and we changed our permit to require that it be an international movement. So we've been operating correctly. It's just not in our statute.
Mr. Miller, Senator
so,
Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to follow up on that, do we have some trucks or containers in this case that are currently exceeding the 80,000-pound max weight limit in the state of Minnesota because they're international, so that means that currently they can go up to 90,000 pounds?
Mr. Howerson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Miller, the last year I checked the permit office to see how many permits we had issued for this, and we had issued three. So we did have three companies that had bought the annual permit. So it's not a great volume by any means.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further for MnDOT, as long as we've got them at the table?
Mr. Chair. Right,
so I see three hands. I'll go Senjum, Carlson, then Westrom. Senator Senjum.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may not be the right person, but we happen to have this chart here which shows adjoining states and higher weight limits. Is it to be presumed that these other states build more substantive, stronger highways, or are they all built to the same standard, generally speaking?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I'm not exactly sure on that. I can only tell you that if you look at North Dakota, South Dakota, their heavier weights are, they were put in there back when there was a grandfather date, and what Congress said is if you had these weights already in your state statute, you could keep them. And that goes back to the interstate system, back as far as 1956. Okay. So that's why those weights are there, those heavier weights. But whether they have built their highways to heavier standards, I don't know.
Senator Scoy, to this point.
Thank you. Yes, to Senator Senjum. And Senator Senjum, what happened, and I don't know the date, but it might have been in the 80s when this changeover was occurring at the national level, and they grandfathered in states to the weight that they were currently above 80,000 pounds. Everybody got 80,000 pounds. Minnesota at the time was 73,280 pounds, and so we went to 80, but North Dakota went to 105,500, and South Dakota went to 129,000. And it was just a function of what their state legislature was doing at that point in time. It really didn't have anything to do with the roads or the quality of the roads or anything, but it really isn't, from my perspective, causing a problem in those states. And we're just making a small step to get us up so that we can, you know, compete close to them. It's just on the state roads, and that's the one thing you all need to remember. The interstates are regulated separately. It's just on the state roads.
Great. Thank you. Senator Carlson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And from MnDOT, you said that there were three permits that were purchased last year. What's the rate of that permit?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, it would be $300 for that permit for the year.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Carlson.
That's an unlimited number of loads?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, yes.
Thank you. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, to Mr. Halverson, how many exemptions do we have? Do you have any idea how many exemptions we have under statute right now that allow higher weights than our current 80,000? I know we do it for agriculture products and garbage trucks. And any idea or estimate?
Mr. Howers.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, I looked at that the other day, and just off the top of my head, I'm guessing that there's at least 25 different commodities that have weight exceptions or exemptions. It goes all the way back to about 1981 when the sugar beet bill was passed, and that allowed sugar beets to haul 10% heavy during harvest. And potatoes were added, carrots were added, timber came along, timber products, and then raw or unprocessed timber products, and then finished timber products, ag commodities. That's where you get a lot of different commodities, is in the ag commodities, because anything produced on a farm would fit in that exception.
Senator West.
Mr. Chair, under this bill, it's maybe for Senator Scoy or Mr. Halverson, it's allowing a road authority with seven axles or more to offer a permit for 97,000. And do I read it right, or 99,000 under the special season allowance? Who's the special road authority? Is that MnDOT, or is that a local county
city? And am I right on the weight? The top weight would be 99 either way, but it would allow 97 if you had more axles and spread the weight out.
Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, yes, it would be 99,000 during the winter weight increase, which is a period of about 2.5 to 3 months during the winter when the road bed is frozen solid.
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Scoy. Let me answer further Senator Westrom's question was. First of all, there's two components, two major components. One is that if you have six axles, you can go to 90,000 during the non-winter period and 99,000 during the frozen period. If you have seven axles, you can go to 97,000 during the summertime. And I think the road authorities for state highways would be, MnDOT, and you could also have a county highway department issuing a permit for county road.
All right. All right. No questions. Mr. Corrigan, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Fred Corrigan. I'm Executive Director of the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association. We've been before this committee over the last few years to seek an exemption. Senator Scoy was gracious enough to talk to us about maybe we should be doing this differently and not necessarily doing this by exception, but doing it by policy. This legislation is consistent with the 2006 MnDOT report that Halverson just mentioned that MnDOT did. Features of this bill allow six and seven axle vehicles to carry, as Senator Scoy mentioned, 90 and 97,000 pound loads, expands the current law that already allows the same type of trucks to haul farm cargo, to haul any type of cargo. Rather than making an exception for certain cargo, it would be applicable to all cargo, regardless of type. The truck length would not change from current law. That's 53 feet. It would remain 53 feet. The only change is that the truck would have more axles to spread the same volume of load and more brakes for more stopping power. As you just discussed, the local authorities have the ability to issue a permit. MnDOT would issue the first permit, and local authorities could also deny a route for any reason. It could be effect on local traffic patterns, complaints, road impacts, bridge safety. I think if I could, I just wanted to quickly take you through the genesis of this because I think it would be helpful to you. As Senator Scoy mentioned, when the interstate system was adopted, Minnesota was adopted at 80,000 pounds. States around us were adopted at a higher weight. In 1991, and I think this is a critical time, MnDOT declared their trunk highway system to be a 10-ton system. And essentially, now you're talking about permitting trucks by axle weight as opposed to by gross weight. And that's what you see happening around the country. So that MnDOT has operated the system as a 10-ton system since 1991. 2005 was the first exemption. The special paper products vehicle permits allowed three-unit vehicle permits up to 108,000. In the same legislative session, there was a special papers products vehicle permit allowing a three-unit vehicle permit up to 108,000 pounds. 2006, the Minnesota Truck Size and Weight Study was completed and recommended six and seven axle configurations as well as a twin trailer with eight axles. In 2008, the legislature pretty much adopted the 10-ton system for all roads in the Minnesota, whereby the gross weight of any single axle exceeds 18,000 pounds on an unpaved street or highway or 20,000 pounds on a paved street or highway unless posted to a lesser weight under Section 169.87. In 2008 also, there was a special farm products permits exemption, which allowed for six-axle 90,000-pound loads and seven-axle 97,000-pound loads. 2008, there was a three-unit vehicle permit for canola hauling on certain routes in northwestern Minnesota with a total weight of 105,000, but again, not to exceed 10,000 pounds per axle. In 2012, and I think one of you was getting at this, there were 1,800 permits issued in Minnesota. 1,200 of those went to agriculture, 600 went to forest products, and apparently 3 went to moving international containers. That generated $500,000 in revenue to administrative costs and also provided local bridge inspection dollars for local government. As was mentioned earlier, Congress debated raising the interstate system to 97,000 pounds as part of MAP 21 and is studying that as part of the next national interstate system. To date, there has been no evidence of increase in crashes, injuries, or fatalities caused by permitted trucks. There has been little evidence of pavement or bridge damage blamed on permitted trucks. The benefits of 1213 essentially are that 6 and 7 axle trucks do less damage due to less weight per axle than current truck configuration. 6 and 7 axle trucks have greater braking power. Trucks are subject to state and local permitting. Truck configurations are the same maximum length as the current trucks at 53 feet. And it allows railroads to move overweight containers from overseas to move on trucks with permits to distribution centers in Minnesota. Lastly, I just wanted to quote from one of the outreach statements in the MnDOT truck study in 2006. The proliferation of exemptions, exceptions, and tolerances in truck size and weight laws creates inequities and adversely impacts enforcement and infrastructure. We want to thank Senator Coy for his work in putting Senate File 1213 together as state policy after 8 years of experience with these configurations in the agriculture and forest products industry and thousands of permits issued since 2005. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Questions for Mr. Corrigan, members? All right. Thank you. We will move now to the opponents. I lost my list again. Mr. Reynoso from the Teamsters and Russell Harrington as well. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Edward Reynoso. I'm the political director for Teamsters Joint Council 32. We have over 62,000 active and retired members in the state of Minnesota, of which many are in the trucking industry. As a matter of fact, the Teamsters Union nationwide represents over 1.3 million members, of which there is no other labor union that even remotely comes close to representing the amount of members we do in the trucking industry. So it's easy for us to say that we are truly the trucking union across Minnesota and the United States. With that said, we are adamantly opposed to Senate File 1213 and any other piece of legislation that would increase the maximum weight of any type of truck on our highway for these following reasons. The Teamsters Union works tirelessly with many employers at improving the safety of our members and the general public at hand. In our opinion, increasing the weight limit on trucks, our members would risk their safety and the safety of the general public. In the United States DOT study, a recent study, specifically noted that increasing the weight of trucks on our highways would lead to an increased brake maintenance and unquestionably would increase the stopping distance. Sometimes our drivers are required to brake in an instant. Do any of you want to have your families on the road in front of a 99,000-pound vehicle coming to a screaming halt? I don't think anybody wants to be in front of an 80,000-pound vehicle, more or less. But the fact is, it's going to take much more time, much more distance, for a 99,000-pound vehicle to come to a screaming halt, especially when they're going 70 miles an hour on some of our highways. I can assure you that carrying 80,000 pounds is clearly much easier to stop than 99,000 pounds. Additionally, our roads and our bridges are simply not up to the standards needed to allow this type of weight increase. Recently, Governor Dayton's Transportation Task Force, the Transportation Finance Advisory Committee, determined that Minnesota must make investments to keep our roadways safe and reliable for business. These are investments that we clearly have not made in the past 20-plus years, nor are they investments that we can conceivably see in the near future, unfortunately. I've enclosed a copy of a 2007 press release along with a few pictures by our brothers and sisters from AFSCME, which represent the bridge inspectors in Minnesota. The press release simply states that our transportation infrastructure is clearly dilapidated, and we have had minimal changes since 2007. While in some respects, bridge inspections have risen, there are 14,000 bridges in the state of Minnesota, many of which are still currently considered fracture critical. In closing, I appreciate this opportunity to express our concerns in opposition to Senate File 1213. But I must end with this last concern, which is about the loss of jobs. As a matter of fact, one of the testifiers prior to me stated, and I quote, Mr. Everest said fewer trucks would be on the road. Fewer trucks are on the road, that means there's fewer members. There's fewer workers. I know just today the governor sent out a press release talking about increasing work in the state of Minnesota, creating jobs. This, Mr. Chair and members, would eliminate jobs. It would eliminate, as we see it, especially in the aggregate industry, it would eliminate one out of every three jobs. A third of all the jobs in the aggregate industry would be eliminated. If you, and I'll put it in simple terms, right now a truck in the aggregate industry roughly can handle about 10 yards of material. Increasing it to 19,000 pounds would allow them to haul another 5 yards. That would eliminate every third truck, plain and simple. It's simply something that I know our members would not be acceptable with. While it may be an advantage to some of these companies testifying here today, and certainly is not an advantage for workers, that would undoubtedly lose their jobs. In an effort, mind you, that would risk our general public safety on our roads. These risks are simply risks that Minnesota simply cannot afford. And we ask that you support us in opposition to Senate File 1213. I want to finish with this. You know, we've heard for the last 20, 30 minutes about companies coming forward and talking about increasing their profits, making more money, making their system work better. But I think you need to hear from the drivers, the people that would be driving these trucks. And that's what I come with here today. We have 4 to 5 people willing to testify that their names are on the list. They want to talk about the reality of it, what it takes to stop a truck. It has an additional 19,000 pounds. What it really takes to drive in our traffic. And we also keep on hearing about the comparison about the weight increases in other states compared to ours. You know, we have 5.3 million people in this state. Iowa has 3 million. South Dakota, 814,000. North Dakota has 672,000 people in their state. When you populate a state much more and you have more condensed population, you're going to have a lot more people that are integrated with the transportation system. And when these trucks need to stop, they need to stop on a dime. You don't have to do that as much in rural areas, such as 614,000 populated state. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to speak and to you today and give you our opinion and what we feel about this piece of legislation. And I'm willing to answer any questions you may have. And certainly, I believe it'd be advantageous for you to hear from the drivers that drive these trucks, not the companies that employ them, but the people that are going to be behind the wheel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynoso. Questions, members? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reynoso, thanks for coming and sharing your perspective with us today. I had one quick question relating to the supply in terms of drivers. Do you think there's a shortage of commercial drivers right now in Minnesota?
Mr. Reynoso.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, absolutely not. I don't believe there's a shortage of truck drivers. And I say this with all due respect. I sit on various boards. One of the boards I sit on is the Minnesota Job Skills Partnership Board. And we had a company come through that exactly claimed the same thing, a company in Duluth that claimed that there's a shortage of truck drivers. And they were looking to train truck drivers in the state of Minnesota because there's a shortage of truck drivers. It's not a shortage of truck drivers. There's a shortage of truck drivers that will do it for $13 an hour, Senator. We need to have decent wages. We need to have respectable wages. And there's not a shortage of truck drivers in the state of Minnesota. There's a shortage of truck drivers that will do it for meaningless wages.
So Mr. Reynosa, does your union have a hiring goal for 2013 or recruitment goal? How many members are you hoping to recruit in 2013?
You know, Mr. Reynosa. Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, you know, we don't have a specific goal on how many members we'd love to organize into our organization at this moment. We don't set goals such as that. We are constantly organizing, looking to organize various industries, not only in the freight industry, the aggregate industry, but in all industries. But we don't have a specific set goal on a yearly basis.
Thank you.
I'd love to make it 100,000 if you'd like to assist.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Reynosa, I guess I can try and rephrase it. I mean, in terms of your signatory employers, have they told you how many drivers are going to need in 2013?
Mr. Reynosa.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, I know that there's aggregate companies right now looking for increased workers in the aggregate industry. I know that some of these companies are constantly looking for help, for drivers. You know, the reality is that most of these companies want to hire experienced help. They want people that have had years behind the wheel. And unfortunately, many of those have left the industry because of the lack of good jobs out there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question first to you, a housekeeping item. Is this a standalone or is this going into the omnibus?
Senator Osmick, this does have a fiscal element to it, so if it does move forward, it'll have to move forward in the omnibus bill.
Okay, thank you.
To be determined.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. We have some information in this report regarding some safety. I'm curious, are you aware of any comprehensive safety studies that were done in the states that surround our area talking about increased or decreased safety as a result of those weights, where we could do some comparisons of Minnesota now versus how those other states are?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not aware of any, Senator, that have recently been done. I know the USDOT has done some studies, but I'm not exactly sure on the extensive amount of information that's done in the surrounding states.
Thank you. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Reynoso. This issue, it's an important issue. My dad actually was a truck driver, so I don't want to put him out of a job, even though he doesn't do this anymore. I was interested to see in the fiscal note that it actually claims that we would be adding permits, which I would assume that means more drivers, to the tune of 1,500 permits, the $300 permits or more. And then the $500 permits, about $1,100. So we would be increasing the permits, and I assume, again, that means we're increasing drivers. I know that some of us, Senator Carlson and I, visited DART, which is a local trucking company, and they actually ran us through the training and the sophistication of their operation as it pertains to the new trucks and how it's not, you know, as easy as it used to be, because these trucks are a lot more sophisticated, and he actually claimed they were good-paying jobs. So just that's kind of the background I have on the state of trucking here in the state of Minnesota. So I understand the concerns about safety as well. Again, I point to the fiscal note where it actually brings those dollars that would be gained in permits to bridge inspection and by being placed in the special revenue fund. So that kind of appeases my concerns, and also the issue of making sure that Minnesota is competitive with other states, and that we are kind of on the same balance playing field in terms of the weight. So I do really sympathize with your arguments and your concerns, but I feel like what I at least see in the fiscal note and from the research that we've been getting, that those concerns are somehow dealt with the monies going to bridge inspections and with the permits increasing, that you actually create more jobs. So I just want to make that point.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Reynolds.
Senator Franzen, I'm going to cut straight with you, and there's not going to be any smoke and mirrors here. The fact is, if you're going to be requesting more permits, that means you're going to be increasing the weights on these trucks. You're going to increase the weight on these trucks. You're going to lose jobs, plain and simple. I'll challenge any of these companies here that could prove to me or to my organization and to our members that we will not lose jobs and that this will increase jobs. If you're going to increase the weight of a truck, you are going to eliminate jobs, plain and simple. No smoke and mirrors.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And committee members, I have to tell you, this is hard for me to sit next to Mr. Rudolzo. I'm a former Teamster, so I sympathize with their positions. But there are a few things that I do need to talk about. First of all, with regard to the job loss and the potential for job loss, the changes are not going to occur tomorrow. This is going to occur over a period of time because these trucking companies are not going to just change over all their trucks in one day. They're going to do that over a series of years as trucks become up for purchasing new ones. And so there's going to be time, and hopefully growth in our economy and growth in the trucking industry is going to absorb some of the reduced loads. The other thing that I do want to talk about is the bridge safety. These trucks have to comply with all current bridge law. No change, no nothing there. There won't be any impact on our bridges because you have to comply with the current bridge law. And so I don't think that there's going to be a change there. And I would draw your attention to this graph and look in the middle part of it here where it talks about the weight per axle and the weight per brake. And if you'll notice, as you add axles, the weight per axle, weight per brake that's required to stop the truck goes down. So there's less weight per axle, more braking capacity per pound. And as one of the earlier testifiers mentioned, he feels the trucks actually will stop quicker. And I think you do the math on it, and it appears to me that that would be the case. But I do think you need to think about that this is going to take some time to implement, and so hopefully, you know, there would not be a negative to the job market, even though the potential might be there. Hopefully the growth in the economy would absorb that.
Mr. Chair, can I comment to that? First of all, I also want to say that it's not an easy thing for me to sit here next to somebody I believe is a friend. I respect Senator Scoey tremendously. I consider him a friend. I just think he's wrong on this one. with all due respect to the implementation process, that it would take a long time. There are drivers here that can testify now that drive six-axle vehicles, that their companies already employ, that their companies already have. So maybe it'll take a little bit longer for that seventh axle, but I can tell you there's companies now that currently use a six-axle truck. And so, and again, I'd love to have you listen to these drivers. You know, these companies are here proposing this. They're not the ones that are going to be driving the equipment. Our members will. Thank you.
Senator Kent and then Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is one of those issues that brings up a lot of trade-offs, and it's a tough one. I happen to have an aggregate company that's not in my district, it's across the street from my district. And, you know, the issue of the heavier trucks is one of concern, but at the same time, having fewer trucks driving in and around the streets of my district, I can see being an advantage even with the trade-off of job losses. So I just think this is one of those where you're going to see, you know, benefits and disadvantages. And so I think that makes this, you know, a complicated issue, no doubt. But when you look at the economic development side and all of that, it's you bring up all these questions. And I would say I think that Senator Scoey probably addressed some of what my questions were, which is the math, basically. I'm married to an engineer. I don't even pretend to play one on TV. But, you know, the questions of the amount of weight and the braking power with greater axles is something that I do think is kind of compelling and you know, is something I think we need to keep in mind. Thank you.
Again, Mr. Chair and Senator Kent, again, I invite you to listen to our members, the people that are going to be driving these trucks. They currently drive these trucks at 80,000 pounds. And ask them whether it's going to be tougher for them to put that thing on a stop. Stop with your family or somebody else's family in front of it. While I think there's economic gain, there certainly is. I mean, it's easy to figure out the math here. But the bottom line is that more important than safety on our roads? I don't think it is.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You touched on safety, and I'm trying to just understand this. So, Senator Scoy, Mr. Reynoso, we've already got vehicles operating at this weight on these roads as long as they're carrying raw or unprocessed agricultural products. So, is in a sense, we're just saying keep the same weights under the same rules, expand what you can carry. Is that a fair assessment? And therefore, probably doesn't change the safety aspect of it at all?
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Pratt. Yes, we currently do have trucks permitted to haul this for forest products and for agriculture. And so the proposal is to, instead of adding to the exemptions, to make this a state general law.
Senator.
All right, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This job argument is compelling, I think. And I know where I come from. When people are driving trucks, it means people are working. And when the trucks aren't rolling, people aren't working. And, in fact, right outside of Chisholm, we have a new plant called Magnetation, which is now putting trucks on the road that we didn't have before. And we actually are getting red ore back on the road that we haven't had for a number of years. But I don't hear anybody complaining because people are working. It seems to me that I heard somebody say earlier on that, well, Senator Scoy came up with the idea of allowing everybody to go to the higher weights, that they had some ideas of some possible exceptions. And so since I don't exactly know what that is, I don't know if there's a way to fix this bill so that we can make everybody happy here with some more exceptions to our laws and keep people working and yet get some exceptions to some of the weight allowances that people are concerned about, because it looks to me like with 5.3 million people in this state, trucks are going to drive in our state. It's as simple as that. And they're not going to bypass the state to go to North Dakota because they're going to be stopping and dropping things off and picking things up. So the argument of people going around the state doesn't wash here, but the argument of people not working does. And so I think there's got to be some happy medium, or maybe another exception or two that can make peace in the valley here. And I guess I don't know what it is, but I would leave that up to Senator Scoy and maybe Mr. Reynoso to figure that out.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Tomasoni, and the other jobs that we would potentially have in my Senate district will be located in North Dakota. And that's not the outcome that I would view favorably.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Reynoso.
I just want to, before I forget, Senator Pratt, his comment or his question, I didn't really get an opportunity to answer it. But, as far as the increase right now that we have, the exceptions for are minimal. And Senator Scoy actually was the author of much of that legislation, if I'm not mistaken, which we didn't oppose. And the reason being is there were exceptions specifically towards the ag and the logging industry. We understand that that it's difficult to, it is a seasonal thing. And so we didn't make an exception to, we weren't upset about that, and we didn't certainly testify in opposition to any of those bills. But this is expanding across the state of Minnesota. This isn't just in the rural industries, in the rural areas where you have ag products or the lumber industry. This is across the state of Minnesota, the states that your family and my family transport our family on. So, I mean, it's something to keep in mind.
All right. Senator Carlson, members, we do have a number of testifiers.
And Mr. Chair, and I guess I want to direct this to Senator Scoy. There's the letter from Congressman Waltz talking about the potential of increasing the weight limit on the interstate also in Minnesota. I can't help but think that with our interstate still at the 80,000-pound limit, wouldn't this increase the heavy truck traffic on our state roads and our county roads because they can't use the interstates?
Senator Scoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, on Highway 10 in Frazee, four-lane road goes to Moorhead, perhaps, but there is no interstate there. Now, if you're traveling from Fargo to St. Cloud, I don't know what the two-lane road scenario would be, but there isn't much options other than going down 94 or Highway 10. I don't know what it would be. So I don't know that it's going to increase the traffic on our two-lane state roads because, I mean, if you're a trucker going any distances, I mean, the time saving on being on the freeway is so significant over driving through all those little towns, and I just don't think trucking companies would route that way.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scoy, I guess that's my point, is that if you can't go on the interstate, if you're over the interstate weight limit, then you'd have to take the smaller roads.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, this business that I'm advocating for is a distribution center for lumber yards, and they'll be traveling to the small towns in the area and delivering lumber supplies.
Again.
Senator Carlson.
And one other thing that, I mean, I've always been concerned about the heavy truck traffic even on my own street, in front of my own house. And there's something that that hasn't been addressed in here when we talk about the ability to stop a truck that has a heavy load on it. There's something called roll-up that is the pavement actually moves. If you are able to stop fast and you're able to stop fast with a heavy load, the stress that's in the pavement tends to move the pavement. And if you can see this in front of almost any stop sign in a rural area where you get the lumpy pavement, and that's what causes a lack of safety because your tires are often jumping there. And I'm wondering if there's been anything that the MnDOT has told you about this particular issue, that where you might get more roll-up, you might get more damage like that to the pavement because you're going to be going on roads that are, you know, that have stop signs and stop lights, things like that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, I think there will be less weight per wheel, so there probably would be less roll-up. But I'm not an engineer, and I don't pretend to play one, as Senator Kent indicated on TV either. But MnDOT did do a road impact study back in 2006, and I think they determined that this was not going to be a negative to the roads in Minnesota. And Mr. Halverson, I believe he's still here. You want to bring him up and ask him a question, I think he'll come up and help answer that.
And Mr. Chair?
Members, I think we have a summary or an excerpt or something from that study in your packets as well.
And Mr. Chair?
Mr. Reynolds.
Senator Carlson, I would argue that the United States Department of Transportation actually had a study, and in their conclusion, it would take much more distance to stop a truck with additional weight.
So, Mr. Reynoso, if you could provide us a citation for that study or a executive summary, that would be a big help. Thanks. Why don't we move on to additional witnesses? Unless I missed a hand. Thank you. Mr. Harrington. And then on deck we have Mr. Mustafa. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Russell Harrington. I've been driving a truck for 25 years. I'm a line haul driver for UPS Freight Incorporated. I'm also a member of Local 120. In my 25 years, I've had no chargeable accidents, no speeding tickets, no tickets of any kind. That's something you have to work at. You want to put this extra weight on the truck, and I hear a lot of people talk about braking distance and stopping distance, and the truck can stop, but there's a lot more to avoiding an accident than just stopping your truck. You know, in 1991, they put ABS brakes on the trucks so that not only could we stop, but we could also maneuver our vehicle. And when you put this extra weight on the truck, like you're talking between 90 and 97,000 pounds, you're going to change our center of gravity. You're going to change our maneuverability, and then, if I understand this bill the way it is being presented, you're going to put us on smaller roads, which is even more dangerous to begin with. You have to look at the overall safety factor of what this bill could do. And the overall safety factor is we want to keep our highways safe. We want to keep people safe. And it's not just trucks or senators or corporate people going to work. It's families traveling up and down these highways. that could get injured and possibly killed by adding this extra weight. Everything we do, from shifting to slowing down to stopping to planning ahead to making a turn even, this weight will affect our lives greatly, and it'll affect how we drive our vehicle greatly. It'll also affect the traffic behind us. I also would like you to point out, to look at, it does affect jobs. It's American jobs that we would lose when you load these trucks, and they're, to my opinion, they're overloading the safety capacity of the truck and of what the capability of the truck can do. You're going to take away American jobs. The third thing is this whole burden for to benefit corporations. I understand corporations want to load the trucks. I understand they want to move as much as possible with one vehicle. But at the end, it's us taxpayers. Even though I'm a truck driver, I'm also a taxpayer in this state. That burden's going to fall on us because it is going to tear up the roads. And the last thing, I won't take up much of your time, but the last thing I'd like you to remember, I don't know a driver that drives a truck in this state that doesn't cross a bridge and wonder if it's going to go up from underneath us. That's something I'd like you all to consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harrington. Questions, members? Thank you. Mr. Mustafa?
Yep. My name is George Mustafa. I'm a former apprentice and a current member of Teamsters Local 120. I work for Schaefer Contracting, which is a highway-heavy contractor. We build highways and roads. I'm opposed to this because of the safety concerns. I believe the risk to the public and to myself and to the equipment far outweighs any gains you can have from a proposed weight change. Road conditions are one concern. The heavier the truck, I don't care how many axles you put on it, it is still heavier. The weight will make a difference on the roads. The heavier trucks are also slower. They are more of a road hazard. The trucks I drive are very heavy. We go on and off the roads. We'll be building a highway, and you'll see that the traffic starts stopped and the trucks go off to the side. And we are running down what's called a hull road that's just made out of dirt. The heavier the truck is, the more susceptible to an accident you'll have there. Also, an average dump truck is about 24, 26 feet in width. You know, the box that you fill stuff in, if you're going to increase the weight, you are increasing the volume. You're going to go higher. It's not the length of the truck isn't going to get any longer. And the more axles you have on a truck, the harder it is to turn that truck, to steer it. It'll be like being on rails now. You have two extra axles, three extra axles. When you turn the wheel, the momentum will take you forward, and it's just so many more wheels you have to turn behind you, basically, to maneuver around the corner. The wear and tear on the trucks also, you're increasing. Trucks are made of bolts, nuts and bolts. You increase the weight, you're increasing the chance of failure, for equipment failure. The back of those dump trucks have latches on them. The more weight you put on them, the more pressure there is on the gates. You know, you can inspect, as a driver, you can inspect a truck numerous times a day to make sure you're safe, but you can't tell the integral structure of those pins that hold that. The more weight you put in there, the more pressure you're putting against the gates that open. You can go down the road and hit a bump and something comes out of it. You're going higher too with the loads. You have a chance of stuff falling out of the truck onto the public itself. It's harder to stop those trucks too. It will be harder to stop a truck. I don't care if you put another set of brakes on the axle. You're increasing the weight. You're increasing your stopping distance. And that's about.
Thank you, Mr. Mustafa. Appreciate your being here. Questions, members? So we have two additions to this list. They're also from the Teamsters, so we'll just jump to them. Scott Brown and Gene Fries. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and then proceed.
I'm Scott Brown. I presently work for Apple Valley Ready Mix here in town. I at present drive a six-axle truck. we gross 78,000 pounds. The world of concrete is sold by volume, not by weight, as in cubic yard per truck, with a maximum, in our case, of 11 yards. I can tell you that from my own personal experience, we vary our loads on a constant, continuous basis every day. At times, it might only have 4 yards. Other times, it might have 11. And I can tell you, flat out, that the difference between a 7-yard load and an 11-yard load for braking with 7 axles is considerably noticeable. There are times when my belly tires, which are the tires between the drivers and the steering axle, will lock up and basically become functionalless for braking. The other issue that I don't think, well, maybe all of you understand, they're talking here about axles increased. Unlike a tractor-trailer setup that has 2 tires per side per axle, as in 4 tires of contact with the road, our ready-mix trucks at 6 axles, I have 3 axles with single tires on them, not dual tires. And that translates into this as well, smaller bearing sizes and smaller brake surface areas. So the whole idea that you're going to increase axles and be safe doesn't necessarily mean so. I drive a 6-axle truck today, and not only do I drive on interstate, I also drive in residential. And there's a big problem there as well. A lot of these residential streets are maxed in the summer months. Once we get past road restriction time of the year, which we're at now, we will run maximum weight in residential neighborhoods where we got kids playing in the street with their bicycles. Now, we all, you know, in the back of our minds at our company, we all drive super slow in the residential areas. But you have that little kid driving up on your bicycle unexpectedly, and you're putting another 17,000 pounds on my truck. Guess what? That's that much more distance or time that I'm going to need to stop.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Brown, questions, members? Mr. Freese.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Gene Freese, number one driver at Apple Valley Ready Mix for the past almost 2 years now. I've been driving for him for 38 years. Drive a 6-axle truck, as Scott's talking about. One of the things I wanted to talk about on the safety issue here is I haul 10 yards of concrete about 2.5 to 3 hours across the 35W bridge before it collapsed. I was very happy to be home that evening when I seen it on the news. Felt sorry for everybody involved. I heard earlier testimony that the size of the trucks are not going to be any larger. We're just going to haul more weight. When I hear that comment, my thought is that means the same number of trucks can be on any given bridge that currently can be there, but you're going to put 17,000 pounds more weight per vehicle on each truck. To me, that you're talking about mass here, and it's, I understand the way things are evolving, that everything needs to become more and more efficient, but I feel a little bit like the cart's out in front of the horse on this one here. I think as fuel quotas and everything are being handed down by the federal government, and that everybody in an effort to do that is making their cars smaller and lighter, and now you want to put heavier trucks on the same roadways. And it's, I guess one of the things that I can say is that I'm glad I'm on this end of the spectrum rather than the other end of it. But when you're writing laws, they're going to be here for a long time, and there's going to be a lot of people that have to deal with what happens here. And I just feel that maybe the bridges and the roadways maybe need to be improved a little bit here before we get out
I don't know what these other states are doing that they can put this much extra weight on the road, but I, for one, would not care to be involved in it.
Thank you, Mr. Friese. Questions, members? All right, thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Appitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I'm last on the list, so hopefully I can be leased, and we'll get on with this conversation. Very quickly, if I could, this is a sort of a deja vu. For people who have been here before, we've had this whole conversation several times over, and for those who haven't, welcome to the truck size and weight debate, which we go through almost regularly.
Mr. Chair, I was kind of hoping this would be the last year we have this debate.
Senator Scott.
I give the chairman credit for trying. Indeed, I do. Let me just say a couple of quick things. Number one, 80,000 pounds is the federal norm. It's not the anomaly. 80,000 pounds is the size of trucks that can travel on interstate highways. The question earlier was, well, why are trucks going around Minnesota? It's because other states have heavier weight limits on their own roads. And the complaint that they can't drive on Minnesota roads is because we don't have heavier weights. They can't drive on interstate roads with, except in North Dakota and South Dakota, because they have the exception that was discussed earlier, that exception. but they allow heavier trucks on their state roads. We don't in Minnesota. And there's a variety of reasons for that. First is one that goes to the Minnesota railroad industry, which I must say is opposed to this particular legislation. Clearly, we have been since 2005. We will continue to be because, in large measure, it's an economic issue for us, particularly short line railroads, where we will divert freight from those short line railroads onto larger trucks that move on Minnesota's highways. It is an economic issue. You are going to be changing the economic equation, and Minnesota's railroads move about 30% of the freight in Minnesota, 30 to 40% of the freight in Minnesota already. There have been a couple of MIT studies. One said that as much as 44% of the freight that moves on short lines will be transferred to heavier trucks, if indeed that is what is chosen in various states. And as much as 25% of the freight that moves on railroads will move off those trucks or move off those railroads onto heavier trucks. This whole conversation, if you may, about the impact of less weight on the highways is pretty much all theoretical. Somebody asked about what do other states allow in terms of the weight on the weight of trucks on their highways. The question, and experts do not agree that more or less weight on trucks, more or less more weight on more axles produces less impact on the highways. In fact, there was a recent study that came out of Pennsylvania that looked at a new approach to this, which is called weight in motion, and took a look at the question of what the impact of more axles actually does on that washboard effect as they go down the road. It's not necessarily so much the axle weight itself as the impact of the axle and the number of axles that are hitting hitting that road. The other thing that was mentioned earlier by a number of the members of the Teamsters here was the impact that this will have on bridges. In fact, when MnDOT looked at and said that perhaps we should go to larger trucks with more axles, it did not look at the impact on bridges. That was before the 35W bridge came down, and we've had some reticence about moving forward with putting more trucks, more weight on those bridges ever since. But the bottom line question, I think, for this group, which is the Finance Committee, is who's going to pay for the increased damage that we're going to be doing to the roads? There's a U.S. DOT study that found that trucks between 80,000 and 100,000 pounds pay less than half of the cost of the damage that they do to the roads. Less than half the cost of the damage that they do to the roads. Push them up over 100,000 pounds, and the MnDOT study did recommend going to larger than 100,000-pound trucks. So just get ready for that. It probably won't be the last discussion we have. But 100,000 pounds pay less than 40% of the cost of the damage that they do to the roads. So the question is, who gets the pay? And we know who gets the pay. The taxpayers of Minnesota, and particularly the property taxpayers of Minnesota, who are picking up more and more of the tab for the cost of fixing our roads. It affects railroads as well. The railroads in Minnesota pay about $30 million a year in property taxes. A portion of that goes to fix the roads that are being damaged by the trucks in Minnesota. If that's the case, we're paying, and this law changes, we're going to be paying to help our competition move business away from us. Finally, we've carved a lot of exceptions, and that's why this seems like deja vu. We've carved a lot of exceptions to the limits that we allow trucks to run. And mainly they have been agricultural exceptions. You heard Mr. Halverson discuss the exceptions that have been put in place since I think it was 2004, 2005. And many of those happen at harvest time. Many of those happen when the roads are frozen. Many of those happen when there are limits in place. And all of those are supposed to be limited. 2005, we said, if you provide one exception, eventually we will go to the question of heavier trucks altogether. Today, that bill's in front of you, and we would say the same thing we said in 2005, which is heavier trucks cause more damage, which you all will get to pay for. There is a federal study underway right now that's looking at this very issue of heavier trucks on federal highways, and I think that might offer some fairly good guidance to all of us if we want to take a pause and wait for the year that it's going to take for that federal study to come down. But I just wanted you to be aware of the fact that Minnesota's railroads, for a variety of reasons, not only safety and impact, but also diversion of freight from our operations, is opposed to this particular bill, and we appreciate your time, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Appetz. Questions, members?
Thank you.
All right. Senator Scoy, the last word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And just to reiterate, these trucks are going to comply with our current bridge law. The MnDOT study recommends that we move toward this recommendation or this direction. And it's not a safety issue because you actually are reducing the amount of weight per axle and per brake that is on the truck. And I would ask for your support.
Great. Thanks. Anything further, members? So, members, this is a matter for the omnibus finance bill. So we will lay Senate File 1213 on the table for consideration in that bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you, Senator Scoy. Last bill, members, Senate File 1416, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Welcome, Senator Champion.
Senate File 1416 proposes a conditional $2.5 million annual appropriation for an innovative program that provides Minneapolis high schools students with Metro Transit cards for transportation to and from school and beyond. Minneapolis Public School has piloted this program in 2011-2012, partially implemented in 2012 and 2013 at five high schools, and plans to move towards full implementation.
Senator Champion. Audience, please take your conversations out of the room. Thank you. It's getting a little noisy. Thank you. Proceed, Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I started to say, that Minneapolis Public Schools has piloted this program this academic year and plans to move forward with full implementation this next academic year at all seven regular high schools and contract alternative high schools. Under the program, two-thirds of our high school students are eligible to receive a Metro Transit Pass from Minneapolis Public Schools that they purchase from Metro Transit at a discounted rate. The conditional appropriation in this bill to Metro Transit will allow Minneapolis Public Schools to expand the program from 3,800 students in the current academic school year to 8,700 next year. And the benefit to the student is threefold, we believe. The Gold 2 Pass provides Minneapolis Public School students with transportation to academic and enrichment activities at school, such as tutoring activities, sports, school clubs. The second benefit, we believe, is employment and internship opportunities, employment teachers, life skills, and discipline that enriches their academic experience. And it also extends the classroom into the city. These passes can be used for libraries and museums, parks, just to name a few. So the Go-To Pass programs offer students the choice to stay engaged academically in other asset-building activities beyond the school campus and school day. And the state benefits in training a new generation of transit-savvy youth who have greater access to asset-building, economic, academic, and cultural opportunities. In closing, should the state adopt a quarter or half cents regional sales tax to increase transit funding, then we will urge you to appropriate these funds for this purpose, for the Welcome Aboard, a generation of transit-savvy youth, and again, all the other benefits that I articulated earlier will be manifest by this particular initiative going forward. So with that, I have two testifiers who will testify briefly because we know that time is of the essence, and then we can go forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Mr. Grathwell.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Grathwell with Minneapolis Public Schools. It's a distinct pleasure to appear before you, first time I've ever appeared in front of transportation. I just want to accent on some of Senator Champion's testimony. Is this is part of our agenda to transform high school, and one of the keys for us in closing the achievement gap is extending the school day, extending the learning time, moving towards online learning and 24/7 learning. And it turns out this transit program that we've initiated and we're asking you to help us expand is a key lever for us to give students choice to engage in further academic opportunities. They're not chained to the school bus schedule. They can stay late for chess club or tutoring or athletics and take the city bus home, the Metro Transit bus home. They can engage in academic learning or online learning at the high school or through PSEL. So this is a key lever for us. We'd really appreciate your support. Mr. Rob Johnson is the program manager, and if you have any tough questions, I'm going to definitely refer them to him.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
My name is Robert Johnson. I'm the Director of Administrative Operations at Minneapolis Public Schools. My department has operational and strategic oversight for the Go-To Pass program. Without going ad nauseum over the same points again, the primary drivers for this partnership with Metro Transit was access and equity to all educational opportunities. We understand that education extends well beyond the borders of a school into the city at large. We want to give all of our students every opportunity to learn culturally enriching activities as well as academically enriching activities. We know that because of the vast number of our students that live at or below the poverty line, jobs and internships are paramount for many of those students. So we really want to give all of our students every chance to have the best academic situation possible within the school walls and outside of the school. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the information. Just do have a couple questions. Did this replace the bus program that you might usually think of occurring in your school district?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, Jim Grathwell with Minneapolis Schools. No, what we're doing is moving high school onto the Metro Transit Pass. We're still running the yellow buses for the going to school, to and from school. So we still have, and I think in this handout that was included in your packet, we have oversimplification of our transportation budget, but we're spending roughly $24.5 million on transportation. We're spending about half of that is special ed, half of that is regular, and kind of the transportation formula was rolled into, we used to, long ago and far away, we had a transportation formula in K-12 finance. It was rolled in 1993 into the general ed formula. The imputed component of the general ed formula is about $9 million of our transportation budget, and we're spending $12 million on transportation. Transportation in the city of Minneapolis is a little bit more expensive because of hazardous intersections, lakes, rivers, streams, and the major highways.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if there were some savings, because if the high school students are not using the orange buses, it seems logical to think that there would be some savings there.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, the key for us in finding savings, we found a minor amount of savings, and we hope as we move to all high school students and all secondary students on the go-to pass, we might find more. But the key driver on savings is bell times. We have five different bell times, and the very complex job of transportation in Minneapolis involves something like this. We can take that bus in the first bell time, and if it's a short bus route, we can use it in the second bell time. If it's a long bus route, we can use it in the third bell time. So it's stacking routes and bell times, and frankly, it's more complex than I understand, but the key is allowing us to reduce bell times. Having those stacked bell times allow us to run a very efficient fleet of, you know, we own one-third, own operate one-third, contract two-thirds. So that's how we've found efficiencies, is stacking the bell times. Unstacking the bell times is how we're going to create savings.
I have some more questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Is this program available to students who open enroll to charter schools or to private schools?
Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, the program right now, and maybe I'm going to push the, ask Mr. Johnson to answer that question.
Okay, so at present,
Mr.
Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, at present, the way the program is structured is any student who would have historically received yellow bus transportation gets a go-to card for free. Any student who is free and reduced lunch who lives within the two-mile walk zone also gets a go-to card for free. If a student resides within the two-mile walk zone and is not free and reduced lunch or outside of the transportation area for their school, they have the ability to purchase the go-to card at an even deeper discount than we provide. Than Metro Transit provides to us. So we buy the cards at $300 per unit. If a family wants to buy a card, we essentially charge them $40 per quarter or $160 for the entire year. But directly to your question of charter schools and whatnot, they are not at this point a part of the program as it currently stands. Oh, but open enrollment, yes, absolutely.
Right. And Mr. Chairman, to the private schools?
Mr. Johnson. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, the private schools are at this point out of scope for the program.
Mr. Chairman, I just would like to comment those, you know, we can pay the taxes, but we can't get the benefit. And so I think in the sense of fairness to all of the kids, I would hope that at least on the reduced cost or something like that, that maybe some language might be able to be included that would allow all students to have the benefit from an area where all people are being taxed.
Right. And Senator Kiffmeyer, I'll just point out that this bill is presently construed and course, you know, it may or may not be taken into the omnibus bill. We can do whatever we want. And this bill is not construed specifically to the Minneapolis Public School District. So
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
They just happen to be the ones who thought it up.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. It doesn't appear that there's any opposition to this bill. And in light of what we just heard about jobs and the previous testimony, I was just curious which union drives your buses in the city of Minneapolis.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, SEIU.
SEIU, and they're not opposed to this
bill?
Not
to my knowledge. And Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, we've worked very closely with Metro Transit and the Met Council on this program, and they've been great partners adjusting bus routes and a volume of traffic, buses during our start times and our kind of end of day. They're neutral on this. But they've been great partners working with us on this.
Great. Thank you.
So then we'll get the ATU in, and then we'll have a big war between SEIU and ATU. All right. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, I was wondering, how much does your program do you expect will cost per year?
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator Pratt, for the school year 2013, which we're currently in, the total cost of the program was $1.34 million. Of that $1.34 million, $1.2 of it went directly toward purchasing cards. Next year, with the projections for enrollment and participation, the program has a projected budget of about $2.63 million, just under that number, of which I'm sorry, about 2.8 million, excuse me, of which about 2.6 million goes directly toward purchasing cards.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got some concerns with this bill. I've been on a school board. We partner with our local unit to transport students. In fact, some of the highest ridership they get is during the summer school season. We're also not on MTC. We're an opt-out. We run our own buses, and as I see it, we're extending a sales tax metro-wide for, you know, a very defined benefit that won't benefit those communities that are paying the tax. It seems to me that local school initiatives like this should be paid for by the local districts. And using, as Senator Kiffmeyer suggested, the options that you have for transportation already. So as it's written and with the funding mechanism, I can't support this bill as it stands today.
Thank you. All right. Any further questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senjum.
I hadn't thought of I'm thinking this is a a Hennepin County tax, right?
Well, Senator Senjum, if you look at lines 1.6 to 1.8, it's contingent upon passage of the additional half-cent metropolitan area sales tax as proposed by the governor, or, you know, it's kind of on the table. Governor's initiative, among others.
And Mr. Chair, that's not done county by county. Is that correct? I thought it was done county by county.
The current tax, the quarter cent that's existing, was enacted by counties individually and then kind of put into a whole pot by virtue of the joint powers, five of the seven counties. The half-cent sales tax that's proposed would be enacted by the legislature, administered through the Met Council and the County Transit Improvement Board on a seven-county basis, on a metropolitan area-wide basis, not a county basis.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Pratt's point, though, there are probably a number of other school districts within that space that would not be eligible for this program?
No, Senator Senjum, any school district of the metropolitan area would be eligible to apply for these funds.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Senator Kent and then Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Champion, you might be the best person to try to answer this. So, because it's getting back to the same point, as a representative of a school district that is within the seven-county area, in theory we would be eligible to participate in this, but recognizing the way that Met Council transportation currently exists in South Washington County, practically speaking, I just don't see this happening. You know, so I don't know if there's any sort of handy rule of thumb that we can identify. It just sounds like this is likely to be pretty well restricted to just a couple of school districts, counties, something like that. And I just think it's important to get a handle on what we're talking about.
Thank you. Senator Champion.
Mr. Chair and Senator, we are definitely always open to finding ways to craft language so it's more inclusive as opposed to being restrictive. It's my understanding that this bill will be laid over for a possible inclusion.
Correct.
And if that's the plan, I will continue to work with you and also Met Council and others to see how we might broaden it so that it's much more inclusive and not so restrictive.
Senator Kent.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as a follow-up, because we do have Met Council Metro Transit in South Washington County and Woodbury, but it's commuter. You know, I mean, it's people coming into downtown Minneapolis Monday through Friday. So I just don't see our students really being able to benefit from that because there's not really intra-district transportation provided by Metro Transit. So thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pratt, did I see your hand?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members? Any questions? Senator Champion, anything further?
Nothing further. Thank you for your time, and thanks for the committee's time to consider this important initiative.
Great. Thank you. With that, we will lay Senate File 1416 on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
With that, members, we are adjourned.